Hello, everyone, and welcome to Let's Talk Mercedes. In this podcast, we will be sharing with you some of the most exciting stories from within the automotive industry. We will, of course, be talking about the Mercedes-Benz brand and its cars, but we also look forward to meeting external experts for a very personal deep dive into the world of mobility. My name is Yasmin Blair, and this is Let's Talk Mercedes. Thanks for tuning in. For today's episode, we decided to switch things up a bit. We invited one single guest to focus on a true living legend in the world of golf, Bernhard Langer. Bernhard has played with some of the greatest golfers of all times, and even after 5 decades in his profession, he is still going strong. Rarely has any other athlete ever achieved comparable long-term success, so obviously I was very excited when I found out Bernhard would be joining us. But the central question for me was, once you've got it all, what is there left to achieve? I wanted to find out how Bernhard has managed to reinvent himself time after time, and where this absolute commitment to get up every day and push yourself even harder is rooted. All of this makes him sound like someone very much out of reach, which makes it all the nicer that the conversation took a completely different turn. I got the opportunity to get to know a very down-to-earth gentleman who, above all, did not hesitate to share very personal insights with me, like what the family of a golf pro has to endure and how he too struggles with life-work balance, just like the rest of us, or how little it takes to give him a sensation of luxury. Here comes the master of reinvention. Have fun listening, everyone. Let me introduce you once more. With me is Bernhard Langer, or to give you the correct German pronunciation at least once, Bernhard Langer, professional golfer, golf legend, and Mercedes-Benz brand ambassador. Bernhard, as for my introduction, I would be very curious to hear how you would introduce yourself. Would that be the same that I've just done, or would it be differently, Bernhard?
No, I think you did a wonderful job introducing me, and I certainly am a person that is somewhat driven. I'm trying to continuously improve and get better. And I have a very strong sense and feeling that I can still do that. Even, you know, I said that when I turned 50, I said, I believe I can still get better. I can innovate myself. I want to become the best Bernhard Langer that Bernhard Langer can be. And golf is such a fickle game, a very technical game, mental. There's so many aspects to it that you can always find certain parts where you can still get 1 or 2% better than where you were. And you gain an experience, which can also help greatly. And so it's a fascinating sport. It's not like many other sports where once you turn 35, you're basically too slow or you're done. You just can't compete. It's actually many golfers achieve their pinnacle after they're 35 because it just takes a long time to learn the technique, to know yourself, to understand the pressure situations. We just saw Phil Mickelson win a major tournament at age 50. And I've been saying this for years, that somebody in over 50 will win a major. It's going to happen again and again.
What just happened, Bernhard, is something wonderful and something awful. First of all, you have answered so many questions that I still have. And on the other hand, you have created more questions for me to ask. So I think what we need to do right here is just take a small step back and start out by helping our audience to get to know you a bit better. So could you begin by telling me where in the world you're joining us from and where do you actually currently live exactly?
My residence is in Boca Raton, Florida, near West Palm Beach, which is ideal for a professional golfer because we have beautiful weather and wonderful surroundings all year round.
So what does your average day look like when you're in Florida? Would you practice every single day? How much time off do you take? Do you actually make use of the beach or any of the other pastimes that you can exercise in Florida?
Absolutely. And that's a wonderful thing to live in Florida. You have blue skies, you have the beaches, swimming pools. I live on a golf course, so I do practice almost every day. Sometimes when I come home from a 2 or 3 week trip, I take 1 or 2 days off and put the clubs in the corner. But my general day looks like about 1 to 2 hours of a workout in the fitness center. Now I have 3 grandkids, so I enjoy playing with my grandkids. Otherwise, I spend a bit of time in my office catching up with fan mail, paying bills, and just the things that need to be done. I also enjoy watching sports on TV. I actually enjoy watching golf. I'm a soccer fan and enjoy most sports.
Do you watch it with an analytic eye? Can you actually relax while watching it? Or do you keep on thinking, oh, you could have done that a lot better? Why did you choose that one?
Yeah, for me, it's maybe even more fun than for most golf fans, because I know pretty much all the courses they play on. I've played there before, so I know what spots are good and what places are terrible. So I can really put myself in their shoes and live through what they're living through when they hit a great shot or a bad shot, or when they make mistakes, or when they pull off something fantastic. And it's interesting for me to watch my other competitors, to watch their techniques, their swing, even what clubs they use sometimes for pitching or chipping, and how they go about it. And to me, it's fascinating, and I feel I can still learn from others by watching them.
All right, so it's also educational. Now, Bernard, I would like to share with you something that someone just forwarded to me the other day. It's this article. It's about a Harvard study. And in a nutshell, to sum it up, it says that scientifically, it is proven that we are happiest when we have made the best work decisions in life. And the best work decisions in life mean that we have to have at least 2 jobs. One has to be a job that will ensure a proper retirement, and the other has to be a job that's just for us to follow our passion, regardless of financial income, etc. And now here you go with the perfect combination of both of those jobs all in one. Now, here's the question. In these 40 years you've been playing golf professionally, have you ever thought of doing something completely different? Did you ever consider some sort of, I don't know, fallback job or second profession? Does it still satisfy you just as much as when you started your career 40 years ago?
Yes, it still does. And my fallback job, only at the very beginning of my career, when I was 18, I decided to try and make a living playing tournaments. But I had already been teaching golf before that. So if the playing pro situation wouldn't have worked out within about 3 years, I would have fallen back to teaching golf, instructing amateurs to play better. But since it worked out, I never had to go to that fallback position.
And obviously,
I'm very satisfied with what I'm doing. I'm extremely blessed and happy. And the other thing is, you know, right now, obviously we have 4 children, 2 sons and 2 daughters, and they're adults. But many of those 40 years that I've been a pro, I kind of felt like I had 2 jobs. I was the professional golfer who was at times selfish out on tour, because I had to do what I had to do to be the best I can be. And my whole day was pretty much focused around my job. And then when I had a week or two off and I came home, I put that aside and I became dad and I became husband and tried to serve my family and my kids. And so those were 2 very opposing jobs, but both very satisfying.
What were the hardest times in terms of feeling that you could only lose or only neglect one of the 2, that you couldn't live up to both of your own expectations?
Well, there were many times when it's a very fine line, and I would always sit down with my wife and try to go over the tournament calendar and look at the birthdays and the holidays and what special things are going on with the family and when would be important for me to to be home. What can I miss? What can I not miss? So it was always a juggling of priorities. And that was probably the hardest, one of the hardest things for me to do year after year, because I didn't want to be another, you know, professional athlete that got divorced and had no relationship with the kids. So I tried to make that as much as a priority as I did my job, and it wasn't always easy.
Thank you, Bernard, so much for giving us this very personal insight. Now, since we have you, since we have this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity of speaking to a legend, let us have a closer look at the sport itself. Let's talk golf. The next generation is really raising the bar when it comes to physical strength. And I've even read that the average golf course is literally becoming too small for some of the younger golfers because they're just so strong. How do you think this physical evolution, so to speak, will affect golf in the future? And is this actually something that you have already noticed or already experienced today, that this level of physical strength is a whole new one?
Absolutely. It's not just the physical strengths. This is a big part of it. You look at all athletes across the globe, no matter what they do, they look so much bigger and stronger and faster and all of it. And it's the same in golf. You know, Gary Player kind of started it many years ago. Tiger Woods took it to another level in a sense. And the players want to be their best. So they're researching, you know, what can I do to hit the ball further or straighter, or what can I do to last longer? And that's happening everywhere. But it's not just the physical aspect. It's also the innovations they made in golf clubs. Now the club head of the driver is not of wood anymore. It's a very light material. It's hollow on the inside. Therefore, the club is lighter. You can create more speed swinging a longer, lighter shaft or club than a short, heavy one. And then the golf ball is a whole nother animal. The golf ball has come so far, so much better with aerodynamics, with the material it's made of, and it just travels so much further. And players are aware of that. So yes, we need to built golf courses that are much longer now. I designed 18 or 20 golf courses around the world. I used to build courses that were about 6,300 to 6,500 yards in total distance. The bunkers, I placed them usually around 240 yards because that's about where we used to hit 30 years ago, 40 years ago. Now, if you put a bunker at 240 yards, the players won't even see them basically because they all fly the ball 300 plus. So you need an extra 1,000 yards of actually playing fairway or golf course, which is more expensive to buy or lease. It's more expensive to water, to maintain, to take care of. So all of that presents a problem. And like you said in the beginning, some of the courses that were designed 100 years ago, 50 years ago, even 30 years ago are often too short, and they have to find ways to lengthen them. And if they don't have the land to do it, they're kind of obsolete for the best players or the younger generation that hits the ball very far. So those are all problems that the RNA, which is the Royal and Ancient, and the USGA, they're our rules bodies, basically. They make the rules of golf. But on the other hand, it's one of the wonderful fascinations about the game of golf. I mean, we all are fascinated by somebody hitting the golf ball 330 yards in the air. That is just amazing to watch and fun. So if they take that away, they take away part of the fascination. So it's a fine line. What do they do and what do they not do?
That is extremely interesting, Bernard, that you also build golf courses. I wasn't aware. If they get larger and larger, what about some of the most famous golf courses in the world? If they're not able to enlarge in them, does that mean that they will vanish completely?
That could be the case. The golf courses will not vanish, but we may not have tournaments on certain courses if they're too short. For instance, if we take the Augusta National Golf Course, which hosts the U.S. Masters Tournament every year, they have made tremendous changes over the last 20 years, 30 years, where when Tiger Woods came along, he basically took the course apart. He was hitting it so far that he would just have wedges into the par fives and even, you know, short clubs into par fours. And therefore, they realized that and they wanted to pretty much present the same challenge players had 30, 40 years ago. So they had to move certain tee boxes back by 40, 50 yards, some even 70 yards. And that's what they did.
If we just go back a couple months to April, then we land at a Masters tournament in Augusta. And you started for the 38th time now, which is a very impressive number. Last year, you were the oldest player ever to make it through the cut. And many other former champions, they have stepped out of competitive playing completely. But here you are, not only still going strong, but seemingly becoming even harsher on yourself when you don't perform as well as you would expect yourself to. Do you sometimes feel that you are becoming harder and harder on yourself? Is it sometimes tiresome, always heading for the very top, never accepting anything less than the absolute maximum performance you can possibly give? It sounds like, or it seems to be, hard work after all these years, don't you think?
I like to be the best that I can be. I like to innovate myself and again, to work on certain aspects of my game where I still think I can improve. Obviously, a golf course like Augusta that is very long, they play about close to 7,500 yards, is rather difficult for me nowadays because I'm hitting, you know, two or three irons or hybrids where the younger guys hit 9 or 8 irons into the greens. And it's difficult to compete with that. But at the same time, I found ways to do that. I just have to be more accurate, more precise. I have to be better in the short game. We all have to have a strategy and be mentally strong. And so if I'm a little better in those areas, I can still compete on a lot of golf courses.
Bernard, you just mentioned the younger golfers, and if I were a rookie and you felt I was very talented and we crossed paths coincidentally and we just had this minute to conversate with one another, what would that one sentence or what would those two sentences of wisdom be that you would like to share with me?
I always encourage young people when they practice on the driving range, I said, you don't just hit straight shots or don't just hit one shot. Try and be a bit more creative. Try and maneuver the golf ball. Learn to feel what your club does and what your swing does by turning the ball right to left and left to right and hit one high and hit one low and just become a little bit more creative and not just the one-dimensional shot.
Become more creative. I'm taking notes for my own personal life. Bernard, you know, when I found out we were going to have this conversation, one of the first things I wondered was, once you've reached that level that you have as a professional athlete, you must constantly be offered partnerships. Why did you decide to choose Mercedes-Benz as your partner back in the day? And not only what made you choose them as a partner, but far more importantly, or even more interesting, what does Mercedes-Benz have that makes you stick around for so long? I mean, I think it's been more than 30 years now, right?
I got some great advice from my manager when I was about 20 years old or 25, and I started having some success. And he said, we're going to try and focus just on very few companies and brands that you want to be associated with and not just take every deal they throw at you. You just don't want to take every dollar they throw at you just to be their ambassador. And I thought that was fantastic advice looking back. So when Mercedes approached me, it was obviously a thrill to be having a chance to be associated with the best car company there was, period. And it was a no-brainer to say yes to Mercedes and be involved with them. So I think blue chip companies like Mercedes is the kind of company that I would like to be involved with, because they are the best. I'd like to be the best in what I do. We're continuously striving to innovate, to become better, to move on with the new materials, with what we've learned in the past. And all of that is exciting to me. And I've truly loved driving a Mercedes-Benz for the many years. And to be their ambassador was a great honor for all these years.
Do you follow trends, EQS, if that's the car that you're looking forward to most right now? Do you keep an eye close on trends in the automobile industry, be it e-mobility, the importance of e-mobility, or urban mobility, or car sharing services? Is that something that's important to you?
Not so much, but I do like to see what the innovations are, what's new, what has been changed, and why. That interests me. And it's incredible when you look back over the history of Mercedes-Benz, and you just look at the last 50 or 100 years and how far we have come. And a Mercedes interior looks like a cockpit now, or what used to be a cockpit, and it's even better than that. The sound of the stereo system, the safety measures, all the things they have improved is incredible. And it makes driving so much better, so much safer, so much more fun. And it's very important, and it's saved a lot of lives over the years too.
I've also heard, Bernard, and feel free to correct me if I'm wrong, but I've heard that you are a very hands-on person when it comes to driving, that you prefer to drive your cars yourself. What value does individual mobility hold in your daily life, going to the golf course and back? Or do you would you also consider having someone drive you there? Or is it something that you really enjoy doing just on a daily basis, getting from A to B in your personal own vehicle?
Well, you're right. I'd like to be behind the wheel myself. I don't mind being driven every once in a while, but if I had a choice, like at home, I always drive. I enjoy driving nice cars, but also like to be in charge and control. And it's extremely important for me to have mobility, to be able to have access to a car and get somewhere as fast and safe as possible.
Now, Bernard, thank you for that. We have already spoken a lot about what it takes to stay successful over all the years. And I think one very important element is something that you've mentioned a couple times. It's reinventing yourself over and over again. If we focus just on the current state, on the present, what are you looking to reinvent right now about yourself, and how do you go about doing so?
Absolutely. I was very blessed to have a wonderful coach for many, many years, Willy Hoffman from Ulm, Germany. And he started with me when I was about 18 to become my golf coach. And as we worked for a number of years, I might have been in my mid-20s, late 20s, he says, I want you to play good golf when you're 40, when you're 50, when you're even in your 60s and 70s. And to do that, we're going to have to make some changes, because the way you're swinging right now is probably putting too much stress on your back. And so we have to make changes so you can be long-term one of the best in the world. And I thought that was incredible smart of him to, first of all, recognize that and then encourage me to change my technique to that extent that I could have a longer career. So looking at the present, I'm starting to lose a little bit of speed. I'm 63, and that's nature. My turn is not as big as it used to be. My shoulder turn, my body turn. My body doesn't allow me to turn as much. So I'm trying to find ways to increase my clubhead speed again.
What are perhaps some things, or what is something that you have been doing the exact same for all these years and that you would not change, because this is perhaps your secret to maintain success?
Well, it's probably my warm-up routine. So when I have a let's say I have a tea time at noon, 12 o'clock. I usually show up about 3 hours before on the golf course. And the first hour I go into the fitness truck and I go in there and I warm up and I have a bite to eat and, you know, put my shoes on, sunblock, all that kind of stuff, get my golf balls and head out to the driving range or putting green probably an hour and 15 minutes before my tee time. And I usually putt a few minutes to get used to the speed of the greens and feel comfortable with my stroke. Then I hit some bunker shots, chip shots, just go through everything for a few shots. And then I go to the range and hit some full shots for about 20, 30 minutes. Come back to putt for maybe 5 or 10 more minutes where I actually go through the routine where I read the putt, line up my golf ball and go through my pre-shot routine and then head over to the first tee probably 5 minutes before. So that's kind of my routine before I go, and I don't think that's going to change, you know.
Bernard, before we have a short look towards the future, I would like to talk to you about luxury, about your definition of luxury. Can you define luxury in your own words, your personal definition, using just one sentence?
Ooh, that's difficult. Luxury to me is something that you truly enjoy. Like I remember, you know, traveling used to be such a chore, such a difficult thing when I didn't have any money. I had to take buses and trains and drag my golf bag and my suitcase and a couple other items with me. If you can fly, that was amazing. And then I had to go long distances to Australia or Japan. If you can fly first class, that's truly luxury because you just feel so much better when you get there at the other end, then you can perform better. So there's certain things that are luxury. And yeah, flying first class, driving one of the best automobiles there is, you know, living in a hotel that has everything that you want. Those are the things that I call luxury.
And I think that's a very beautiful definition and very practical thinking at the same time. Now, last question up before we close. If you give me from the top of your head a very spontaneous response, what would be your first pastime that you would invest most time in if you stop playing golf, if you retire? What would that be?
Playing with my grandkids.
Okay, great. Perfect answer. Thank you so much, Bernard, for the lovely conversation.
Thank you, too.
And thank you to all of our listeners. That was brand ambassador and golf legend Bernard Langer, or Bernhard Lange in German. Thank you so much for joining us. Take care, everyone. I look forward to our next episode of Let's Talk Mercedes.